even though the Weather Service has said good visibility, high ceiling, the small chartered plane now found itself engulfed in storm clouds. The pilot shifted nervously in his seat, trying to get a fix on a landmark below him. But the passengers didn't really notice the threatening clouds. They were too busy enjoying this, the first leg of their college homecoming celebration. There were the newlyweds, Bonnie and Dorothy Lindstrom, class of 75, who were going back to revisit the site of their engagement. There was E.G. Randolph, class of 38, recently rehired as a teacher by his alma mater. Jean McManus was handing a flask of martinis to her husband, Gordon, and looking forward to her first return to college as a national TV personality. When the engine first sputtered, the altimeter read 5,000 feet. The plane started dropping fast, but the revelers were so busy they didn't notice their descent. Not until the aircraft broke through the clouds and began plummeting toward the earth at a tremendous speed. There were no screams, no shouts. The engines were mute. An eerie, dream-like silence filled the cabin. The pilot rattled the controls, but the ground rose up, and suddenly the air was filled with a single scream. The plane sits on the desert sands completely still. A single lizard scampers across the wing, pauses, and disappears. Philosophers have often asked, if a tree falls in the forest and no one is there to hear it, does it make a noise? Well, we might ask this question tonight. If a plane crashes in the desert and there's no one there to see it, did the crash really happen? My name is Yaphet Kotto, and in the next half hour, our six travelers will learn the answer to this question.
Tonight, live from the Magic Castle in Hollywood, a Halloween story, starring John Carradine, John Clark, John Houseman, Casey Kasem, Gene Kasem, June Lockhart, Gary Owens, Lynn Redgrave, and our host, Yaphet Kotto. Tonight's Halloween special is brought to you by Jensen Sound Systems and will benefit the United Nations Children's Fund. Good evening. This is Marvin Miller. Our distinguished all-star cast is assembled on the Palace of Mystery stage here at Hollywood's famous Magic Castle. And in a moment, they'll return with part one of A Halloween Story.
We're here at a Jensen Car Audio Dealer getting ready to see and hear the grand prize in the Jensen Travel First Class Sound Sweepstakes. There it is, an incomparable Porsche 928 equipped with Jensen Sound. Well, sir,
yeah.
How do you like it?
Beautiful. Sounds just beautiful.
But the Porsche. Young man, how would you like to win a Porsche?
Gee, it sure sounds like a Jensen.
It's a Porsche. We're talking about a $38,000 machine here.
For sound like that, it doesn't surprise me.
Yes, and you could win one of over 1,000 other great prizes, including Jensen home speakers, car audio systems, dishwasher record care systems, and more. Complete details are at your participating Jensen dealer. No purchase is necessary. The Jensen Travel First Class Sound Sweepstakes is limited to licensed drivers 18 and older and is void where prohibited. Entries must be in by November 30th, so hurry. Win a terrific Jensen car sound system and a Porsche 928 to go with it.
Hey, turn that Jensen up!
Aside from the crisp, clear days and joys of family and friends, autumn is a time for reflection, an opportunity to put accomplishments in perspective and establish goals for the future. For UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, this means a hard look at what it's like to be a child in today's world. Unfortunately, life continues to be a struggle for millions of boys and girls. In some areas of the developing world, a child has only a 50-50 chance of surviving adolescence. Millions of babies die each year from measles, whooping cough, and diseases related to impure water. Malnutrition affects more than half of all the children in developing nations. Yet each of these conditions can be improved or prevented. UNICEF knows how and works in over 100 countries to bring health care, better nutrition, clean water, and basic education to the children who need it most. UNICEF has been working for children in need for 35 years, and 3 million volunteers in the United States are helping to make it all possible. This has been a public service announcement on behalf of UNICEF.
The desert at dusk. The full moon is out early this evening. Not surprising. After all, it's All Hallows' Eve. There would be no sound at all if it weren't for the shuffling footsteps of six battered travelers, still in shock from their harrowing experience. They've been walking now for several hours, and shock has turned to worry. If at this moment you ask any one of them if this were real or grotesque nightmare, not one of them could answer you.
Next time I'm in a plane crash, remind me not to wear spiked heels.
Well, next time we go to your reunion, my darling wife, remind me not to fly.
Oh.
How will we get there?
Well, I'll walk. Mr. Randolph, after this hike, we'll all be in shape.
How much longer are we going to walk anyway?
I guess you hotshot TV stars do a lot of sitting.
Not any more than you hotshot pilots do, but maybe that's your problem. How long have you been flying?
Look, if you want to stop, stop.
Will the rest of you stop with me?
Oh, they're crazy, they will. I'm not going to freeze to death because some TV prima donna gets sore feet.
Oh.
Now, listen, my wife wouldn't have sore feet if you could fly that plane.
Wow. Hey, come on, you guys. Look on the bright side of things.
The bright side, Mrs. Lindstrom? What bright side is that?
Well, my wife has a point, Mr. Randolph. We all lived through the crash, you know. I mean, isn't that right, sweetheart?
Yeah. That's right, hon.
But I don't know how we did, though. The sun went down, if everybody noticed, 5 minutes ago.
Well, that means it's going to get real cold real fast, which is why we have to keep moving to stay warm. What do you say, Mrs. McManus?
It's all right. But if I ever get out of this desert alive, I'm going to sue everybody involved in this fiasco.
Wait a minute. Am I going crazy or...
What is it, Barney?
Not sure, but it sort of looks like a fire.
No way. Sometimes the desert plays tricks on you.
You may be right, Mr. Simpson. I see something, too. Over to the left there.
Yeah. Come on, quick. Let's go check it out.
Oh, my God, there is a fire.
And a person. No, two people.
That's impossible. We're in the middle of nowhere.
Over here. Come over. Warm yourself.
Oh. Thank you. Well, let me shake your hand, mister. It's the only part of me that's not numb.
You'll never know what a godsend you are to us. My name is Jean McManus.
I'm Bartholomew Kingsley, and this is my wife, Sibella.
Oh, thank you, everybody here. Come on now, huddle around our fire. We've some coffee.
Oh, great. Wonderful.
Oh, I'd love a cup. I'm freezing.
Now, what in the world are you all doing out here?
I guess we could ask the same question of you.
Certainly. Sibella and I are from the University of New Mexico. We are naturalists.
This is one of the two places on Earth to observe a certain species of desert wildlife. It's known as
Please don't bore them, dear. The fact is we'll be out here for a while yet.
Oh, well, we were hoping you could give us a lift back to civilization.
Oh, I'm sorry. We don't have any transportation.
What does that mean?
And there aren't actually any roads anyway. That's why it's an ideal spot to observe nature.
Well, then how did you get?
Helicopter. They'll be back for us in 2 weeks.
Mr. Randolph, you must be freezing to death over there. Come closer to the fire.
No, I'm fine over here.
Suit yourself. Hey, look, everybody. Looks like we're going to spend the night here, so why don't we listen to the radio or something?
No, there's no radio, no television.
Then where in the heck are we?
If you look up the word nowhere in the dictionary, there's a small picture of where we're sitting.
That's funny, Jean. Maybe you could use that on your TV show.
Oh, are you on television?
Yes, I told you before. I'm Jean McManus.
Oh, how nice for you.
She's on that show, Wake Up America.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. Interviewing diet doctors and other marginal celebrities.
It happens to be the number two rated show in its time slot.
Look, forget it. If we can't watch television, let's do something else. You know, like we could...
I know what. Let's sing our college fight song.
Oh, please, spare us all.
Hey, wait a minute. We could play a game. How about charade?
Oh, huh? No.
Mr. Lindstrom, your imagination astounds me.
Well, maybe you could come up with a better suggestion?
Okay, how about get me out of here?
Yes, I second that motion.
Hey, wait a minute. If we had made it to our college homecoming, what would we be doing right now, huh?
Drinking.
Dancing.
Yeah, listen to this. Since it's always on Halloween weekend, we'd be listening to Scary Stories at Midnight. Oh,
that's right. Yeah. It is Halloween. I forgot.
Oh, yeah.
Well, look, why don't we do just that? How about if everybody has to tell a scary story or something, huh?
Oh, that's a splendid idea.
Oh, anything to pass the time.
How about this? Just to make it even more interesting, I suggest we specify that all the stories must be absolutely true.
Oh, great. True stories are always the scariest.
Okay, Barney, then why don't you go first?
I gotta think of one.
Why don't you go first, Gordon? Tell us a true horror story. Wouldn't your marriage qualify?
No.
Would you?
Well, that's nothing compared to flying with you.
Yeah, I agree.
I wonder if this qualifies. Now, this didn't actually happen to me, but many years ago when I was teaching, a close friend of mine lived through something that was quite fascinating.
Hey, yeah, sure, that's okay, Mr. Randolph.
Let's hear it.
Yes, by all means.
All right. Let's see if I remember correctly. Ah, yes. He told me it all began one night when his wife shouted at him from another room. She'd been ill for some time, you see, and he... Yes, dear.
Oh, don't patronize me. I can't go to sleep without my medicine. I certainly can't go to sleep with that incessant hammering going on down there.
Just be patient, dearest. I'll be up there momentarily.
You know I've been sick. I cannot be expected to... Edgar.
Oh. Hello, Priscilla.
What are you doing? Look at that. You made a huge gaping hole in the wall. Why? And what are those?
Stonemason's tools.
Oh, really? Really? This is certainly an interesting time of night to take up that for the first time.
Perhaps it is.
Well, I'm going back to bed. I expect you to
no,
follow me.
No, Priscilla.
What do you mean, no? That rope. What are you doing with that rope, Edgar?
I've thought this over a lot the last 2 years.
What are you doing? Have you lost your mind? Put that thing down.
Don't make this any more difficult than it has to be, dearest. It's the only way. I simply can't stand it anymore.
Stand what? Being a kept man? Living off my father's money?
No, Priscilla, it's not that. It's the shrill voice from upstairs demanding I perform the services of a butler. The nagging, the imaginary illness. I have to be free of all that.
Well, you can be. I'll do anything you want. You can have a divorce. Yes, certainly. Then you can marry that woman you've been seeing.
So you know about her.
Yes, but that's all right. Just go. Oh, Edgar.
Go, Priscilla. It'll be all over in a moment.
Oh, no.
Priscilla, please.
You'll never be free of me as long as you live.
Roger the cat saw everything with her yellow eyes. It saw him put Priscilla's body inside the wall, plaster the wall, and cover over the plaster with the exact same wallpaper the rest of the house was papered with. Now, all my friend had to do was report to the police that Priscilla was missing. What was that? Could it be his imagination? Or was she still... No, it couldn't be. He put his ear next to the wall. What he heard made icy perspiration ooze out of every pore of his body. He knew she was dead, but he was absolutely sure of it, and yet... That voice from another world. Who could it be at that hour? He stood in the doorway, frozen with fear. Yes?
It's the police, sir. Would you open the door?
Why, what's the problem?
Would you open the door, sir?
All right, hold on.
What is it, officer?
We had some complaints from your neighbors.
I was shouting for my wife. She seems to have disappeared from the house.
What?
Well, she's been very ill for the last few months, and occasionally she'd talk about taking her life. I returned to the house a few minutes ago, and she was gone.
What does she look like, sir?
Well, she's in her late 30s, dark hair, a little on the dowdy side.
Jerry, drive the patrol car around. Look for a dark-haired woman. She may be ill, and,
Wait a minute. What's that?
What?
It's a woman crying or moaning. It's coming from the room in there.
I don't hear this. What are you trying...
Get out of my way, sir. Well, I'll be darned.
Would you look at that?
Oh, my God. The cat is going berserk, scratching at the wall.
Stop it, Roger. Stop it. It's all right, officer. I'm afraid she misses my wife. She's very fond of her.
I'll walk around the neighborhood, sir. And in the meantime, if she shows up, you call us.
Thank you, officer. Thank you. Was she alive inside that wall? She couldn't be. And yet, that constant crying. He sat up in the rocking chair listening to it. All the long night till daybreak. And then it stopped. Silent. This was wonderful. What? Where am I? I'll be there in a second.
Sir. I'm very sorry to bother you.
Who are those men with you?
They've got something to show you, sir. It isn't too pretty. You'd better brace yourself. Come on in, boys.
Yes, certainly. Put it down there. What is it?
A woman we fished out of the river not more than 24 hours ago.
My wife?
It's hard to tell, sir. You see, the body got caught in the propeller of the boat. We need someone who knew the deceased. Pull back the sheet, Jerry. Is it your wife?
Priscilla. Yes.
There's no need to go downtown, sir. I'll take care of everything, and I'm sorry. Let's go, boys. Good night.
He knew he could never chance leaving that house, not for a second. He never did. He'd just sit there in his rocking chair listening. The only way he could be safe was to stay there in the house, and stay he did. The weeks turned to months, the months to years. Trapped, imprisoned, he who risked everything for freedom. Yes, may I help you?
Good day, sir. I'm Mr. Kirkland from the bank.
Is there some problem?
I'm afraid so. It seems you've overdrawn your account, sir. It appears the money your wife left you is all gone.
Gone? In so short a time?
Sir, your wife has been dead for 40 years now.
40? It seems like only yesterday.
I know a way you could raise some $250,000.
$250,000? How?
By selling this house.
What?
The lot has become very valuable, you know. One of our clients wants to build a high-rise here.
No, that's impossible.
Be reasonable, sir.
Get out. Leave me alone. Get out. I'm not starving. I don't need it.
Very well. Good day.
But he was starving. He hadn't eaten in 4 days. That night, when the wailing returned again, he made a decision. He would open up the wall and confront whatever it was that was making that sound. That's what he did. It only took a few minutes, and finally, when there was an opening large enough for him to peer into, he saw the decayed corpse of a woman dead 40 years. As he stared at the pile of cloth and rotted flesh, that horrible wailing that had pervaded his life for so long continued. But how? Why? Then he saw it. Source of the sound that had made him a prisoner of his own home. There it was, just above and to the right of the body, a tiny hole he'd made when he first broke through the wall. And it was the sound of the wind rushing through it that actually made the unearthly sound he'd been hearing all this time. He reached in and placed his finger over the tiny opening in the wall. The sound suddenly, finally ceased. Only to begin again when he removed his finger. It only took a few seconds to turn the house into a raging inferno of flames. He wanted to stay and to perish with the house. But even that freedom was denied him. They rescued him, brought him to a hospital, and later when he awoke and asked the question...
No, sir. Nothing was found among the ashes. Everything was burned to a fine powder.
If only he'd set the fire 40 years before. But no matter. What's done is done. The fact that he wasted all those years is just something with which he must live. And something with which he'll die.
It was shortly before midnight when Edgar Randolph uttered the last words of his story. Within inches of the now flickering lamp fire, desperately drawing on its waning warmth, they were silent. What is real this night? The wrecked airplane? The desert? The strange story they had just heard? But they couldn't see it. Nor could they see that the storyteller still sat apart from them, away from the fire.
You're listening to A Halloween Story, starring John Carradine, John Clark, John Houseman, Casey Kasem, Gene Kasem, June Lockhart, Gary Owens, Lynn Redgrave, and our host, Yaphet Kotto. Part two will continue after these announcements.
We're here at a Jensen Car Audio Dealer getting ready to see and hear the grand prize in the Jensen Travel First Class Sound Sweepstakes. There it is, an incomparable Porsche 928 equipped with Jensen Sound. Well, sir,
yeah.
How do you like it?
Beautiful. Sounds just beautiful.
But the Porsche. Young man, yeah? How would you like to win a Porsche?
Gee, it sure sounds like a Jensen.
It's a Porsche. We're talking about a $38,000 machine here.
For sound like that, it doesn't surprise me.
Yes, and you could win one of over 1,000 other great prizes, including Jensen home speakers, car audio systems, dishwasher record care systems, and more. Complete details are at your participating Jensen dealer. No purchase is necessary. The Jensen Travel First Class Sound Sweepstakes is limited to licensed drivers 18 and older and is void where prohibited. Entries must be in by November 30th, so hurry. Win a terrific Jensen car sound system and a Porsche 928 to go with it.
Hey, turn that Jensen off!
Aside from the crisp, clear days and joys of family and friends, autumn is a time for reflection, an opportunity to put accomplishments in perspective and establish goals for the future. For UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, this means a hard look at what it's like to be a child in today's world. Unfortunately, life continues to be a struggle for millions of boys and girls. In some areas of the developing world, a child has only a 50-50 chance of surviving adolescence. Millions of babies die each year from measles, whooping cough, and diseases related to impure water. Malnutrition affects more than half of all the children in developing nations. Yet each of these conditions can be improved or prevented. UNICEF knows how and works in over 100 countries to bring health care, better nutrition, clean water, and basic education to the children who need it most. UNICEF has been working for children in need for 35 years, and 3 million volunteers in the United States are helping to make it all possible. This has been a public service announcement on behalf of UNICEF.
And now we return to our special Halloween radio drama, live from the Magic Castle in Hollywood. Once again, our host, Yaphet Kotto.
When the evening began, the campfire was roaring, blazing, and gave comfort and warmth against the cold night air. But now the flames were smaller and much less comforting. somewhere not here, a clock was striking the midnight hour on this All Hallows' Eve.
What was that?
Just a coyote, Mr. McManus. They rarely come down here, especially in a crowd like this.
If I were you, Gordon, I'd be more frightened of Mr. Randolph.
Sibylla.
Don't worry. I've never heard such a load of bull in all my life.
What? Well, it was a little far-fetched. Scary, but far-fetched.
There's no way somebody's going to stay cooped up that long. And there's no way a guy's going to get away with it with two murders like that, free and clear.
You're wrong, sir. Because he did get away with two murders, I should know. I was that man.
What?
That's why you won't come near the fire.
That's right. I hate fire more than I dislike cold. So you see, Sibylla's right. You should be frightened of me. Having twice violated the taboo against homicide, what would stop me from acting again?
Yes, indeed. Well, I'll take your word for it.
Well, who else has a story?
I've got a story. It really happened. And what's more, I'll even admit out front that it really happened to me. You see, I had this problem in the service during the war. I kept talking back to officers and people like that. And eventually, I got thrown in the brig. And then one day, I found myself talking to another officer.
Simpson?
Yes, sir.
I've got some good news for you. You've done so well here, cleaning the latrines and peeling potatoes, that we're giving you a little vacation.
You're not letting me go, are you?
Well, much better than freedom. We're sending you to an island paradise, a little place called San Ramon.
Not that lighthouse. They closed that down years ago.
Well, we're reopening it. And you and Mallory and Cooper will be our first guests. You'll have 2 months to work on your inability to be civil to your superiors.
But, sir, I...
You're always complaining about the noise around here. Now you'll get some real peace and quiet.
Listen, sir, I know my rights. You can't give me punishment duty unless...
So long, Simpson. Send me a postcard.
I'll never forget seeing it for the first time. Sure, I'd heard all the stories, the rumors, and the legends about the San Ramon Lighthouse. But the reality of actually being there...
Hey, y'all, come on out here on the catwalk.
What is it, Cooper?
Aren't those big things Portuguese man-of-war?
And over there, those huge bat-like fish are devilfish. And over here, you can see...
Shark.
That's right, Simpson, the big guys, the 15-footers.
Yeah.
We're stuck out here for 2 months, stuck in this stinking lighthouse?
They have a lot of nerve calling this an island.
What do you mean?
It's only a couple of hundred square feet to begin with. And when the tide comes up, the island disappears completely.
We're trapped. We're trapped here for months, 2 months, huh?
Oh, 2 months, 2 years, 200 years. There was no way to tell time on the island. As if the desolation and the sharks weren't enough, there was a sickening, hot, rotten-smelling wind that came at us day and night from the jungle swamplands. We had three goals: to service the light, to stay alive, and to keep from going insane. Every morning when the tide was down, I'd step outside for a breath of stale air. And then I'd slam the watertight bronze door in the base of the lighthouse and start going up, up and around, up past the tanks of oil and the coils of rope, the cases of wicks and the racks of lanterns, up past the food supplies, the cartons of cigarettes, up past the bunk room where my two partners were still sleeping, and into the living and cooking room to make breakfast for the three of us. And above us, always, the light itself, the one redeeming feature of the island. It was a beauty, balanced like a ballerina on a glittering steel axle of her rotary mechanism, sweeping the harbor in 360-degree turns. We all got along pretty well, considering we were sent here as discipline cases. Still, Mallory was the biggest of all of us, and he didn't mind using that girth to get his way. He had arms the size of my legs and a disposition that was black as the San Ramon nights.
When I get off this stinking hellhole, I'm going to find the guy that set me up. Just because a guy gets into a fight or two defending his honor is no reason to be sent out here.
Well, the word is you did more than fight. The word is...
Yeah, I killed a man, sure. Sure, maybe I did. Anyway, why don't you just button up about my private life? We'll get along just fine.
I'm just trying to pass the time.
Well, do it quietly.
We've already got one chatterbox on the island, and that is enough.
Mallory was a nasty, egocentric bully, but he was dead right about our other mate, Skip Cooper. He was wound as tight as a $2 pocket watch. In fact, the reason he was here was his tendency to snap in critical combat situations.
Of course they had to put me out here, you know? You know, they... Oh, they knew that I had a sordid operation. And they had sordid operations, it was even worse. That's right. In fact, every time I've been disciplined, it's been because of pure, unadulterated envy.
Envy? What are they envious of that you've ever done?
I have plans, Simpson. Plans for reorganizing the entire hierarchy.
Oh, come on now. Do you ever present this to anybody?
Just to an officer one time. He had me locked up. But next time, I'm going to the president himself. Here's what I'm going to tell him. Mr. President...
His plan was a ridiculous, paranoid fantasy aimed at wiping out enemy naval strength using automated submarines. After a while, I learned to walk away, but he just kept talking anyway. Those were the two men I was stuck with, stuck for two solid months. And somehow I managed to get through the first 7 weeks, but the first day of the eighth, I spotted something peculiar. At first, it was just a tiny speck. Speck of white on the horizon. I stared through the telescope, waiting for it to come closer.
Mallory, Cooper, come up here.
Yeah, what is it?
Take a look through this telescope.
Where?
Right over here.
Well, I'll be damned.
What is it?
It's an old three-masted sailing vessel, like they used in the 1800s.
Well, no wonder I couldn't recognize it. It's probably somebody's yacht, don't you suppose?
Well, whoever it is, he's the worst sailor I've ever seen. Look at that. He's coming right toward the reef.
How far away is it?
Oh, it's about a half mile off. I can't believe he doesn't see the lighthouse.
Look, he's turning around. Let me see the telescope.
Now, wait a minute. Something's wrong out there. That boat is freely coming about, but there's nobody at the rudder. There's nobody on the ship.
You mean it's derelict?
That's exactly what I mean.
But that's $500,000 worth of boat. Why would they abandon something like that?
Give me that telescope again.
None of us could figure it out.
Now, wait a minute.
Hold on. All that night, we stayed up and watched the three-masted craft being tossed about on the waves, not moving closer, not moving farther out, just endlessly turning under the sweep of the uncaring, one-eyed god above us. It wasn't until dawn that the ship started toward the rocks again.
Cooper, put out the light. Now the sun is up, and maybe we can see if anyone's on board. Oh my God.
What's the matter? What is it?
Here, look for yourself.
I put my eye to the glass. My breath froze in my throat. The deck of the ship was moving. There was a thick brown carpet undulating up and down like a hyperactive fungus. Only it wasn't a fungus. I turned the scope on the mast, the bow, the life preservers. No matter where I looked, there were hundreds, thousands, millions, who knows how many... Rats.
Rats!
Now we know why she's a derelict. Nothing on board but rats. They swim. They eat anything. I've seen them as big as jackrabbits.
No. Turn back. Go on back. Please, go back.
No such luck, my talkative friend. The ship is coming right toward us.
Right for that boulder. Turn! Turn!
She's cracked him up. She's cracked up, and that's not all.
The rats, they're swimming to shore. Oh, the door down below is open.
Well, get it quick. Come on.
Come on.
Here we go. Here we are. We leaped down the stairs faster than I thought possible, taking steps three and four at a time. By the time we got to the ground floor, we could see and hear them.
Quick, close it tight.
It's stuck. Help me. Push harder.
We made it.
No one got in. Quick, get him. Get him.
Get that knife over there.
Mallory was right. If anything, he'd underestimated the size of the rats. This one was as big as a tomcat. It had jagged yellow teeth and wild red eyes. It was out of its mind with hunger. It leaped up at Mallory, who hit it with a mop handle and stunned it. I moved in for the kill.
Well, we got it. Now, quick, let's get upstairs. Let's check the windows. Maybe they can climb.
We clambered up the stairs, and with each flight, that sickening feeling in the pit of my stomach got deeper and deeper and deeper. For at every single window, there was a thick curtain of brown fur.
Look!
They were so tightly bunched, they blocked the light out. We got back up to the tower. And yes, the entire 360-degree panorama was now completely covered by rats.
Make
Will you go away?
Get up, chicken. This ain't no time for whimpering.
Leave him be. There's nothing we can do now.
The air was thick, fetid with the smell of them. The only light we were getting was a dark brown haze. The light of the sun filtered through their thousands of bodies, which clung to the glass like hideous brown barnacles on a ship's bottom.
They're noisy little fellas, aren't they?
Yeah, they were noisy. They screamed and howled and threw themselves against the glass. We sat there in a stupor of despair, waiting for who knows what. Cooper was getting very near his breaking point.
Go away. Go away.
They won't go away.
Why not?
Not until they've been fed.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And so we waited, contemplating the horror hour after hour. And something funny happened. I guess you can only take so much, because pretty soon we got used to it. It became fascinating to watch the rats.
Hey, they can't understand the glass, you know? No matter how hard they try, they just can't figure out why they can't get through this invisible shield and get to us.
Tide's coming up.
No big deal.
It is to those rats down there. There must be 10,000 of them on the rock.
And every one of them can swim for hours. No, you can't drown a ship's rat. Never.
We lay there numb, bathed in a soft, filtered red light. Sunset through the rats.
Let's go below, Cooper. Simpson, you take first watch.
Why should I go below? There's nothing there. There's no way out. It's all part of a plan. They sent that ship to make it look like an accident. I never go...
Okay, help me with his feet, would you? I'll see you in 8 hours.
It was dark now, so I started the light. It drove the rats crazy. They'd hiss and whine and twitch when it swept by. It blinded them, and their eyes flamed red as it passed over their huddled bodies. That was scary, but not as scary as what I saw on the dark side of the lighthouse. Eyes. Thousands of points of blank red eyes staring in at me, twinkling like the stars of hell. I didn't want to turn my back on them, any of them, but you can't help it when you're stationed in a round glass room. The next morning, Cooper must have thought that Mallory and I had lost our minds. We were playing with the rats. That's right, playing with them.
What are you doing?
We would get as close as we could to the glass and make faces at the rats, stick our tongues out at them, and they'd scratch and claw to get at us. It would drive them crazy.
Now, don't do that. Don't do that.
Then Mallory took our little game a step farther.
Hey, watch this. I'll just take this piece of bread and I'll put it on the glass, right?
All right.
Now, there we go. Look at them. They're bunching up.
Okay. Yeah.
Hey, have some more.
Give them a whole slice.
Yeah, have a whole slice.
They formed a huge knot of rats, and when the knot got big enough, it would fall off the window 110 feet into the sea below us.
Look at that, those sharks. Now they're getting them. I never thought I'd say this, but the sharks are helping us up here.
We both turned around to see what Cooper was doing. He was standing against the window, spread-eagling his body against the glass.
Cooper!
Suddenly he leaped back.
Look!
The rats had bunched up to get at him, forming a grotesque silhouette.
Ladies and gentlemen, my portrait in rats! Rats! Rats!
This kind of thing went on all day long, until finally I just couldn't take it anymore. I was half dead with a mental exhaustion of trying to stay alive. I dragged myself down to my bunk, about to drop off, when I heard a new noise. I went downstairs, and I saw it. One of the window panes was sagging in. Oh, my God! The rats must have eaten through the wood on the outside of the glass! Mallory! Cooper!
What is it?
Look at the window! They'll be in here any second!
Quick! Front door shut!
Here we are! Okay, I've got it!
Tell me.
We have one more problem here, and it's the trap door! It's wood, too!
Hey, you can already hear him working on it.
It wasn't.
Mallory, Simpson, they're pushing up on the door with their weight.
Well, now then, all of us, come on, stand on the thing. Stand on the trap. Weigh it down.
Push it down.
But it wasn't enough.
Push it.
The rats slowly lifted the trap door and our bodies just far enough for two of them to leap into the supply room.
Push it down.
Get the catch. Get the pouch.
Shoot it.
I grabbed a marlin spike and nailed one in midair. But Mallory wasn't so lucky. The one remaining rat took a gigantic chunk out of Mallory's arm. Blood was pouring out everywhere. I speared the rat with the marlin spike, too, just in time to hear the sound of the storeroom window also give way.
We're all out of time. We're going to have to make a run for it.
Oh, my arm.
Get going.
We raced on, shut the next trapdoor, also made of wood. We could hear the rats below. They'd already defeated the last trapdoor, and we knew they'd be through this one in no time.
I gotta lay down.
No time for that. Come on with me. Here we go, up.
In my arm, the blood.
We could see the rats coming through the second trapdoor, even as we threw the third one, the one to the tower, this one made of steel.
Oh, safe. To die.
Mallory plopped himself down against the wall and stared at his ravaged arm. Cooper? Well, he was huddled over in another part of the room, talking softly to himself. And down below us, the rats. We could hear them fighting over our food supplies. The ones on the window didn't move at all. They were waiting for another meal. And I had a feeling they might not have long to wait. Mallory was unconscious. Now it was just me and Cooper. I rolled over and fought to clear my head when I saw Cooper standing near the window. What was he doing? He had a wrench in his hand, and he was tapping at the glass. Not quite hard enough to break it, but almost.
Would you like to come in, huh?
No, Cooper!
There's no point in us going on. Maybe we better just let him in or something. Oh!
He was out for good this time, and I was all alone now. It was just me and the rats. That night, I tended the light as always, but the flame was consuming what was left of our oxygen. At midnight, the light went out for good. There was nothing to do now. Occasionally, I'd strike a match, and I'd see millions of tiny red eyes all around, watching, waiting. Down below, it was quiet also. I guess they'd eaten all our food, because a deathly pall hovered over the entire lighthouse. Quiet. So very quiet. Then I heard it. It was a cornet or a trumpet. I crawled over to the glass and looked out. There in the channel was a small freighter, a banana boat that had wandered off course. It was easy to get sucked into the reefs without the light we provided, but this boat was drifting toward us ever so slowly. Unaware, there was trouble ahead. I watched in horrified fascination as she ran aground on a reef not 200 feet from the lighthouse. It was so gentle. The trumpet player didn't even miss a note. That's all. The sun came up the next morning, and there wasn't a rat left on the entire island. Not a one. Yes, every single rat had gone back to sea on a brand new ship. The only contact today with the water that I have is an occasional Sunday afternoon sail in a small boat. And often I'll see a small freighter go by. And even now I'll get a chill up my spine, because I know that somewhere out there is a ship with no crew. At least, no human crew.
In a moment, the conclusion of A Halloween Story. Coming to you live from the Magic Castle in Hollywood.
We're here at a Jensen car audio dealer getting ready to see and hear the grand prize in the Jensen Travel First Class Sound Sweepstakes. There it is, an incomparable Porsche 928 equipped with Jensen sound. Well, sir,
yeah.
How do you like it?
Beautiful. Sounds just beautiful.
But the Porsche. Young man, yeah? How would you like to win a Porsche?
Gee, it sure sounds like a Jensen.
It's a Porsche. We're talking about a $38,000 machine here.
For sound like that, it doesn't surprise me.
Yes, and you could win one of over 1,000 other great prizes, including Jensen home speakers, car audio systems, dishwasher record care systems, and more. Complete details are at your participating Jensen dealer. No purchase is necessary. The Jensen Travel First Class Sound Sweepstakes is limited to licensed drivers 18 and older and is void where prohibited. Entries must be in by November 30th, so hurry. Win a terrific Jensen car sound system and a Porsche 928 to go with it.
Hey, turn that Jensen up.
Aside from the crisp, clear days and joys of family and friends, autumn is a time for reflection, an opportunity to put accomplishments in perspective and establish goals for the future. For UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, this means a hard look at what it's like to be a child in today's world. Unfortunately, life continues to be a struggle for millions of boys and girls. In some areas of the developing world, a child has only a 50-50 chance of surviving adolescence. Millions of babies die each year from measles, whooping cough, and diseases related to impure water. Malnutrition affects more than half of all the children in developing nations. Yet each of these conditions can be improved or prevented. UNICEF knows how and works in over 100 countries to bring health care, better nutrition, clean water, and basic education to the children who need it most. UNICEF has been working for children in need for 35 years, and 3 million volunteers in the United States are helping to make it all possible. This has been a public service announcement on behalf of UNICEF.
And now, the conclusion of the Halloween story.
Now the desert fire is almost gone. Before the freezing men and women still huddled around the smoldering embers, much of the reality of this night seems to have vanished also. Now there's only darkness. Now there's only time for reflection.
That was a great yarn, Simpson.
So how about something that happened to you, Barney?
Wait a minute. Now, we're being very poor guests. I'd say it's time for our host to spin a yarn for us.
Yeah, how about something that really happened to you folks?
Well, all right. How about that incident in the jungle?
Oh, with the tiger? Yes, yes, of course. That's a good one. And it happened to both of us.
Well, we were in the jungles of India doing research for a book on types of jungle wildlife.
And when we arrived, the guide warned us never to walk near the jungle without a rifle, even just for a short walk.
We observed that rule faithfully, except for that fateful morning we found ourselves being followed by a full-sized, man-eating Bengal tiger.
Holy cow, did you start running or what?
Oh, heavens, no.
You see, the tiger was merely stalking us. If we had started to run, so would he, hastening our certain demise.
So there we were, walking as fast as we could, with the tiger walking just a little bit faster. And then I saw this small stone cave to our immediate left.
We knew by entering it that we were cutting off our escape route, but maybe the cave had some place to hide out, right, darling?
Yes, or perhaps it came out on the other side of the hill.
So you're in the cave. What does the tiger do?
He followed right along, still gaining on us slightly.
The cave is very dark and very musty.
And there was no daylight at the other end.
We were trapped, completely and without a doubt.
Before we knew it, the cave had narrowed down so low that we had to get on all fours, crawling as fast as we could. And by this time, we could actually smell the tiger behind us. Oh, it was a fearsome smell. I almost fainted.
We crawled on our hands and knees till it narrowed down even more. And then we crawled on our stomachs.
And we were sliding on the slick green moss covering the smooth stone.
And the tiger is still behind you?
Oh, he was gaining on us all the time. We hadn't crawled very far when our worst fears were realized.
Yep, the end of the cave.
Well, this is the best story yet. How the heck did you... How'd you get out of this one anyway?
Get out of it? Whatever do you mean?
We were eaten. Right there on the spot.
What? Come again?
Well, actually, Sibella, that's not quite true. He did drag your body back to his lair and munch on it for a while.
Oh, yes, of course. You're absolutely right. Forgive me, dear. How silly of me.
Hold on. Right, just a second. Slow down. Now, if that's true, then you wouldn't be here, right? Unless you're, dead or something.
I guess it's time to tell them, dear.
Go ahead.
Bartholomew and I are very pleased to welcome you all.
Of course, the plane crash.
What do you mean?
Then it was no coincidence, our finding you here?
Of course not. You see, we were sent here to welcome you to your final home.
Home? And what do you mean, where?
I mean here, Mr. Lindstrom.
Would you care here. For a little more coffee?
Of course,
We're here at a Jensen car audio dealer getting ready to see and hear the grand prize in the Jensen Travel First Class Sound Sweepstakes. There it is, an incomparable Porsche 928 equipped with Jensen sound. Well, sir,
yeah.
How do you like her?
Beautiful. Sounds just beautiful.
But the Porsche. Young man,
yeah?
How would you like to win a Porsche?
Gee, it sure sounds like a Jensen.
It's a Porsche. We're talking about a $38,000 machine here.
For sound like that, it doesn't surprise me.
Yes, and you could win one of over 1,000 other great prizes, including Jensen home speakers, car audio systems, dishwasher record care systems, and more. Complete details are at your participating Jensen dealer. No purchase is necessary. The Jensen Travel First Class Sound Sweepstakes is limited to licensed drivers 18 and older and is void where prohibited. Entries must be in by November 30th, so hurry. Win a terrific Jensen car sound system and a Porsche 928 to go with it.
Hey, turn that Jensen up!
Aside from the crisp, clear days and joys of family and friends, autumn is a time for reflection, an opportunity to put accomplishments in perspective and establish goals for the future. For UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, this means a hard look at what it's like to be a child in today's world. Unfortunately, life continues to be a struggle for millions of boys and girls. In some areas of the developing world, a child has only a 50-50 chance of surviving adolescence. Millions of babies die each year from measles, whooping cough, and diseases related to impure water. Malnutrition affects more than half of all the children in developing nations. Yet each of these conditions can be improved or prevented. UNICEF knows how and works in over 100 countries to bring health care, better nutrition, clean water, and basic education to the children who need it most. UNICEF has been working for children in need for 35 years, and 3 million volunteers in the United States are helping to make it all possible. This has been a public service announcement on behalf of UNICEF.
Tonight's special live Halloween drama from the Magic Castle in Hollywood was made possible by Jensen Sound Systems. The NBC Radio Network is proud to announce that all commercial proceeds from tonight's program, along with the performances of our all-star cast, staff, and production crew, have been provided to benefit the United Nations Children's Fund.
A Halloween Story was written by Richard Proctor and starred John Carradine, John Clark, John Houseman, Casey Kasem, Gene Kasem, Marvin Miller, June Lockhart, Gary Owens, Lynn Redgrave, and your host, Yaphet Kotto. Music for this live drama was scored and played by Ray Calcord. Sound effects by Bill Brownell and Bob Mott. Network engineers, Bruce Briggs and Tom Pearson. Technical director, Stuart Sloak. Audio assistants, Andre Groton and Norman T. Ballone. The associate director for this drama was Christine Coyle. The associate producer, Gene Frost. And for NBC Radio, Maury Trumbull, director of programs. The entire production was under the direction of Richard Orkin and was produced by Jeffrey Sudikoff for the NBC Radio Network. I'm Rod Roddy, wishing you all a happy Halloween. Thank you.